This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start the week with Mondays with the Mayor. Acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey is here to take our questions and yours. So if you live in Boston or have something Boston-focused on your mind, you can ask your question at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. Mayor Kim Janey, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Tiziana. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for coming. There's so much to talk about, and I want to start with some big news out of Washington today, Mayor Janey. President Biden has nominated Suffolk County DA Rachel Rollins to be the next U.S. attorney for Massachusetts. If confirmed, she'd be the first Black woman to hold the position. You named DA Rollins at your swearing-in as one of the women on whose shoulders you were standing in that historic moment. So I wanted to ask you, what does it mean to you and for the city to see her so close to another big first today?
I am just so thrilled. I am so proud, not just of her, just so proud that we are here in this moment in our city's history, in our country's history, to have someone who has been a dear friend, a sister in service, a partner in justice work. To see her as, a neighbor, a Roxbury girl, make it to U.S. attorney, I think is so exciting, and it is well-deserved. Rachel has certainly served Suffolk County well as the DA, and I'm glad to see that President Biden has recognized her leadership and what she brings to the table, and I think she would make an amazing U.S. attorney.
Have the two of you had a chance to speak today by chance?
Well, I'm sure you can imagine we both have very busy schedules. I did reach out certainly to congratulate her and we'll catch up with her soon. We did meet last week and had a great discussion. Again, just she's an amazing partner in the work that I am doing as mayor of Boston. And I could not be more excited to see her leadership recognized by our president.
I'm sure you're aware that as her name was floated for the post, reformers were concerned that, you know, as a reformer in the Suffolk County DA role, for her to move out of that role could cost momentum on reforms she's been pushing. Are you concerned about that? And do you have preference on who you'd like to see appointed as an interim replacement for her?
Well, I would look at it this way. This creates an opportunity for someone else to come into leadership and to continue the good work around justice and racial equity here in Suffolk County. And so, we cannot limit a superstar such as Rachel because she has done such a good job as Suffolk County DA. She should not be penalized for that. I'm glad that her leadership is being recognized, and I think we should view this as an opportunity to have a great U.S. attorney as well as her successor being a great Suffolk County DA. And so I hope that the governor would appoint someone who will continue the good work that she has begun as the district attorney for Suffolk County.
Let's take a call. We have a caller in from Hyde Park. The number to ask Acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey your questions, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Dean is on the line in Hyde Park. Dean, you are on with Mayor Janey.
Thank you for taking my call. Madam Mayor, I'm a 21-year resident of Hyde Park, and I'm wondering if you could give the listening audience an update on the status of Crane Ledge Woods, which is a 24-acre parcel, one of the few remaining parcels of that size in the city. I know right now it's under severe development pressure, but there is broad support in this neighborhood to preserve this as open space. And this is not just about open space. This is about climate justice, environmental justice, social and racial justice, because we know that climate change falls disproportionately on working-class communities of color.
Dean,
thanks, Dean. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm sorry. Dean, you're absolutely right on that last point. I've heard this come up a number of times, and we'll be scheduling a walkthrough with a number of leaders in Hyde Park and residents who have raised this issue to come out there personally and see this parcel of land. And I hope you'll be able to join us when we get that scheduled.
Thanks for that. So let's stay with today's news for a minute, Mayor Janey. This morning, you formally announced a free bus pilot. It's the 28 bus links Roxbury, Dorchester, and Mattapan. It's going to be free for 3 months, beginning on August 29th. Why this bus, and how will the program work?
Well, I was so excited to announce this pilot this morning. This has been something I've been advocating for a number of years. This particular bus route is the most used bus route in the entire MBTA network. It has the largest ridership. It is also a major economic corridor. Blue Hill Avenue connects three busy Main Street districts in Mattapan Square, Grove Hall, and Nubian Square. It is also an area, the neighborhoods that are covered there are also neighborhoods where some of the lower income residents of our city reside, and their main mode of transportation are buses. And we know that this is also an equity issue. And so what we hope to do with this pilot is certainly offer some economic relief for residents who ride the 28 bus, but also to learn from this pilot, to see how all door boarding could help with the speed in which buses travel through our streets, seeing if this increases ridership. We certainly need more people to seek out other alternatives as opposed to riding in cars. And so I was just really excited to offer this pilot, and I hope that we are able to take this and expand it to other bus routes.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about that. I'd love to hear the end goal, whether that is all other bus lines, some other bus lines, all of the T. I'm mindful you and Boston City Councilor Michelle Wu are both in the mayoral race. Wu has been pushing for a free T for several years now. What is your end goal here?
Well, you know, as someone who doesn't own a car and relies on public transportation, even as mayor of Boston, I still take the T as often as I can. This, to me, is a very important step forward in helping to expand fare-free buses beyond the 28 bus. And so I'm, you know, this is all going to come down to money. And as mayor of Boston, I have invested $500,000 in this pilot in partnership with the MBTA. And I hope that, you know, the lessons that we will take from this pilot will help us expand not just this bus line, but to other bus routes, particularly when we know that for Black residents, they spend 64 more hours on buses than other residents in the city. So this does have a huge impact and can make a difference in terms of our goals toward equity in the city of Boston, as well as dealing with climate justice. You know, this is important because the more people we get onto buses and out of cars, the better we are doing for our planet.
Last question on this. You talked about the $500,000 in city funds that you're dedicating to this pilot. So if this were to become permanent and or expand, what is the sustainable source of funding to offset those costs?
Well, we would definitely have to raise revenue for this, and perhaps there'll be other revenue that we can invest in the short term, but we would have to have a long-term revenue stream. And, you know, I would love to see you know, the state join us in partnership and thinking of creative ways where we could approach this and view this as an opportunity. I'd like not to think of the budgetary constraints as an obstacle, but rather an opportunity for us to figure out ways to be creative in raising some money to sustain this long term.
We are doing Mondays with the Mayor. Call with your question at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Mayor Janey, we started sort of in the space of law enforcement and reform, we were talking about Suffolk County DA Rachel Rollins and her potential nomination and potential confirmation as U.S. attorney. I want to come back to law reform now, police reform in particular, and I want to ask you about the Patrick Rose report. You had set June 17th as the deadline to release a report on how the Boston Police Department handled sexual misconduct allegations against Patrick Rose. Today is July 27th. Do you have a set of initial recommendations in hand, and when will you release them?
Yes, yeah, so there should be a review and recommendations coming this week. As you mentioned, late April, I asked the very new executive director, Stephanie Everett, to deliver a plan for review and reform of the police department's internal affairs procedures. It is very important that we understand what happened in terms of process all those many years ago, so this does not happen again. And so that review and those recommendations will be forthcoming this week.
Okay, and then just why now? What happened to the June 17th initial deadline?
Attorney Everett has been working on this. She's been doing a lot of research. As I'm sure you and your listeners are aware, when she was hired, she was a one-woman show, charged with not just investigating this case, but building the actual office. And she has done an incredible job, and I am looking forward to releasing her work later this week.
And do you have it in hand now, Mary Janie?
It is in development and will be ready for review this week.
And any other updates on the work of, so OPAT, the Office of Police Accountability and Transparency, the budget funded it for a launch of July 1st, as you pointed out. You named Stephanie Everett in April. She started in May. Other updates on the work of OPAT and what's coming next for them?
Well, she continues, in addition to this investigation, she continues to build out the office and hire staff and put in place the number of recommendations that have come through that task force, including what is listed in the ordinance itself in terms of the different boards and commissions. And so at the time that we release this, we will be able to offer some additional updates on that work as well.
Okay. And last month, you formally fired former police commissioner Dennis White. You have said that you're not going to appoint a permanent replacement before the November election, but you wanted to put together a committee to start talking with residents about what they want from police leadership. Any update on that process, the committee, the conversation you want to have with residents?
Yeah, so we are pulling together a committee of folks who will help in that process. It is very important that we engage, I think, residents, as well as have some checks in terms of vetting, so that we, again, don't end up in a similar situation. And I think given where we are in police reform across our country and where we are here in Boston in terms of reimagining police, it is important to bring community stakeholders to the table for that conversation and for that work, so we can do that work together.
I'd like to grab a call here, 1-800-423-8255. We have Keith on the line. Keith's calling from Lynn. Keith, you are on with Boston Mayor Kim Janey.
Hello, thank you. And I just first of all wanted to say congratulations, and I really do appreciate what you've done for the city and also what you're doing for the future generations. And you inspired me to put my name in the Lynn mayoral race this year, but I had to withdraw due to some prejudice and racial disrespect I encountered in front of my son when I was getting signatures in front of like a Market Basket and CBS's. So having said that right there, I couldn't imagine being a woman of culture, you know, because I don't like to say, you know, people of color anymore, but being especially a strong woman of culture, I couldn't imagine some of the backlash or some of the, you know, just the disrespect indirectly probably you received, and how strong mentally you must be to handle that. And I just want to say thank you for continuing to do that good fight and doing all you're doing and inspiring me. And again, as well, pretty much a lot of future generations and the current one right now. Because in this time and in space,
let's
and this social, economic.
Let's get Keith. Let's give acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey a chance to respond to what you're saying there. Thank you.
Hey, Keith, thank you so much for stepping up in your own community. As you highlight, we still have a lot of work to do all across our country when it comes to race relations and dealing with structural racism. I'm very proud to serve as the first Black mayor and the first woman mayor for my city, the city that I grew up in, and a city that I witnessed a lot of the issues that you were describing as a young girl and as a young woman. And I know that me being mayor certainly represents how far we've come, but we certainly have a lot more work to do. And so I hope you will stay at it in your own city, in your own community, and not give up.
We are in the middle of Mondays with the mayor. Acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey is still with us. If you have questions, we're going to talk about COVID next. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Mayor Janey, last month you, I want to switch now to COVID. This month, Delta variant on the rise, at least 35 Boston cases from the cluster that originated in Provincetown. I know there are a lot of things you are paying attention to. How are you feeling about the state of public health in the city right now?
Well, we should all be concerned to see COVID, you know, on the rise. But I think we've known all along that COVID would be with us for quite some time. So it is an important reminder for us to continue to do the things that protect us in terms of wearing our masks, particularly when near other people who you're not sure their status, if you're indoors and can do so, certainly in all of our municipal buildings. That is part of what we are doing here in Boston. Frequent hand washing, of course. And, you know, the most important is the vaccine. We know from, you know, those who have been hospitalized by COVID that this, you know, it is mostly people who are unvaccinated, and the same in terms of deaths, people who have been unvaccinated. And so while there have been some breakthrough cases, our best defense continues to be the life-saving vaccine. And we continue to work hard here in the city, partnering with a number of community health centers and community groups with mobile vaccination sites to get more and more residents vaccinated. Right now, 60% of all Boston residents have received the life-saving vaccine, and we are working hard to get it out to more and more residents.
So last week, you said that all Boston Public Schools staff and children, regardless of vaccination status, would be required to wear masks in classrooms in the fall. The Boston Teachers Union backed you on it. You just mentioned that people are already wearing masks in summer school and municipal buildings. I'm sure you're aware Governor Baker has taken a different approach and said he's not going to change where the state is now and leaving that up to localities. The CDC also hasn't made that change yet. Walk us through your decision to require masks in the school year at this point.
Well, we know that masks help protect us. And we know that for many of our young people in particular, those who are under 12 years old are not even eligible for the vaccine. And we know that masks will help keep us safe while we continue to work to vaccinate young people, students who are 12 and older. Our littlest children are not even eligible. So we need to continue to do what will keep us safe. This has been our policy ever since I reopened the city last spring, that we would have masks inside of municipal buildings. And we're going to continue with that as we continue to monitor the data and be informed by the data as we make decisions here in Boston.
Let's take a call here, 1-800-423-8255. We've got Dave on the line from West Roxbury. Dave, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mayor, you're masking up all students, even ones that have been vaccinated, which in my opinion is a mistake. It says the anti-vaxxer folks, the people who don't, are hesitant, that it really doesn't work. It maybe works, but it doesn't work good enough, so maybe I'm not going to get it. Well, my question is, if after the CDC approves it for use for kids, you know, elementary school kids, and it's been a sufficient amount of time for people to get vaccinated, are you going to take the mask mandate off then, or are you going to require staff or students be vaccinated before they can return to school?
So thank you so much for your question. It isn't about whether it works or not. It is not relying on the honor system, nor asking people to show proof that they have been vaccinated. So just as we allow all of our school children to eat a school lunch without proving that they are income eligible for it, we are going to have the same approach to remove any kind of stigma when it comes to wearing masks. And we know that masks help protect us. And so we will just continue to do those common sense things that keep us safe.
You know, schools are kind of one of the nexus points for so much around COVID policy, Mayor Janey. And I think back, you know, to March 2020, schools shut down for a while, we thought, and then they were shut down for a very long time. People so relieved to be thinking about schools back in person in the fall, the Delta variant frightening a lot of people. Do you have a dashboard or a set of metrics that you are watching on which you'll make future decisions about how to tack, right, as we continue to see new variants, as cases, they're spiking now, as vaccinations increase? What are you going to be watching, and how will you think about decisions around schooling in a systematic way?
You know, it is important for us to all recognize that this is, in fact, the third school year that is being impacted by COVID-19. And so it has been very difficult for our young people, for our parents, for our educators and our administrators in our school. We look at a number of metrics in the city of Boston, in addition to the positivity rate and the sheer number of cases and tests. We certainly look at the hospitalization, we look at ICU, we look at a number of metrics, and it is important that we continue to be informed by the data. My public health team, Chief Martinez, the Chief of Health and Human Services, as well as the Public Health Commission, review this data on a regular basis, and we review it as a full team regularly as well. We will, as always, be informed by the data and make decisions based on what the data are telling us. And so I commend certainly parents and educators in particular, who I'm sure are very fatigued, and certainly our students, who have demonstrated such resiliency, dealing with a global pandemic. And I, applaud the efforts of the superintendent and everyone who is working very hard to make sure that our school buildings will be ready to receive students this fall.
And what is your message to those who are still hesitant to get the vaccine, Mayor Janey? You must run into people as you're doing your work throughout the city. What do you tell people?
You know, it is, I understand that people may have questions or fears, and I try to connect them to trusted sources of information that might help alleviate those fears or make an informed decision. It is very clear from what we are seeing with those who are being infected by COVID, those who are being hospitalized, and those who sadly continue to die from this deadly virus, that the vaccine is our best defense. And so we are getting to a point where you can choose to get vaccinated or unfortunately run the risk of contracting this deadly disease. And I am hopeful that, people will take the time to do their own research, talk with their doctors, trusted, their clergy, whoever they need to speak with, to make an informed choice for themselves that would protect them and their loved ones. You know, there are a number of children, again, who are not eligible for the vaccine. There are a number of seniors who, fortunately, the numbers are much higher. We have, for everyone in Boston 75 and up, that vaccination rate is 90%. But it is important that we take the steps necessary to protect ourselves and really battle this pandemic. Otherwise, it will continue to mutate.
We've been talking. I'm sorry, I lost your sound there for a second. I thought you were done with the sentence. We have been, I want to move on a little bit. We've been talking some about schools. And last week you swore in two new school committee members, Lorena LaPera, the Massachusetts Executive Director of Latinos for Education, and Rafaela Polanco Garcia, Director of Parent Engagement and Organizing at St. Stephen's Youth Programs, which serves BPS students. Tell us a little more about those two as your picks, and what you hope they bring to the committee.
You know, I could not be more thrilled to announce two superstars to the Boston School Committee. They each bring a lived experience, a skill set, a deep, deep commitment to education, to young people in our school system. They are both BPS parents. Lorena, came here to the United States undocumented and worried for herself and her family, not quite understanding what that all meant and the need to have a green card. She has just contributed so much as the leader of Latinos for Education and brings so much to the body. Rafaela, is more recently arrived to Boston from the Dominican Republic. Her primary language is Spanish, and she will need support in terms of interpretation and translation on the Boston School Committee. She has already demonstrated her deep commitment to education as a parent organizer, and how we support her will help us move the Boston Public Schools forward in terms of how we engage with so many families in Boston. You know, more than half of the students live in households where English is not the first language. We have a large number of English language learners in BPS, and Spanish is the second largest language group after English. And so both women just bring so much and will help us move the school department and ultimately education for our kids forward. So I am just really thrilled and proud of their leadership and what they bring to the Boston School Committee.
So Mary Janie, they joined the committee after former school committee chairwoman Alexandra Oliver Davila and member Lorna Rivera resigned after text messages between them were leaked to the press. And those messages exchanged the night of the vote. This was the vote last October to suspend the exam school's admission test for the fall of 2021. And they had some disparaging content about white West Roxbury parents. A federal judge was later upset with the city for not including those texts and materials submitted as part of a lawsuit over that decision. You were not sworn in until the end of March. When did you find out that the city's lawyers hadn't included the texts? And what was your reaction? How did you handle it?
You know, I'm not sure why those messages were not shared last fall. As you mentioned, I was not the mayor at that time. For me, though, it is very important that we are prioritizing transparency here in the city of Boston. And so under my administration has released all of those text messages. And, you know, it is important that we are able to move our city forward and certainly our school system forward. And I think the appointments of Lorena and Rafaela help us do that.
I am looking outside my window and it's sunny, and that is such a relief after a July of constant rain. You know, you are running a city, you're running a campaign, you probably aren't getting much chance to soak up the sun and get any R&R, but are you going to get a chance to take a break this summer? And if so, what are you going to do?
You know, I don't think I will have a break in terms of the traditional vacation, but I was very proud to launch the Joy Agenda this summer for all of us. We've all been so devastated by COVID. Many residents have been living in isolation and in fear. And the Joy Agenda really, reminds us of what is important in terms of reconnecting and reimagining and renewing our city. Everything from concert series in our parks and, movie nights for families, the different sporting events in terms of Little League and the Mayor's Cup are all underway. And it has been great to see so many folks being able to enjoy the outdoors. We're doing a series of coffee hours and just an opportunity to rebuild and reconnect with each other. So I do hope, even though I can't take a traditional vacation, to spread some joy and to be joyful with residents all across our city in every single neighborhood.
And just in a word, where are you getting your joy right now?
Oh, I get joy in the smiles and laughter of my grandchildren. I get joy from visiting community gardens, from speaking with our seniors all throughout Boston, eating in these amazing restaurants, even though my clothes are fitting a little tight now. You know, I get joy all over the city of Boston. It has been just the honor of my life to serve and to connect with residents all across our city. And I find joy in those conversations and hearing of people's hopes and dreams for the city of Boston.
That is Acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey joining us for our monthly Mondays with the Mayor. Mayor Janey, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Really appreciate the opportunity.
One lucky person today is going to get a phone call from an unknown 617 number. It will not be spam. It will be officials. It might sound like spam because it'll be officials from the state's Vax Millions lottery calling to say that lucky person is the first $1 million winner. And we have some questions about this. Fortunately, one of the roughly 2 million fully vaccinated folks that are hoping that phone call is for them has some answers. Radio Boston's own Jamie Bologna. Hey, Jamie.
My question still is, when am I getting the call? I'm looking at my phone now. Nobody's calling.
You have the ringer on during our live show.
No,
yes,
I don't. So I don't. But I'm looking at the screen, just making sure in case I miss this phone call.
You have my permission to drop if you get $1 million phone call while we're chatting here.
Yeah, and listeners, we do. Again.
That's right. Listeners, we do want to know if you have signed up for Vax Millions. What are you dreaming about doing if you were to win? Or do you not think this is a good use of the state's money? We want you to weigh in. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So, Jamie, give us a quick rundown. How is this thing going to work?
Sure. So there are 5 $1 million drawings that will happen every Monday through August 19th. That includes today. The winner will be announced on Thursdays, and there is also a separate drawing happening for children between the ages of 12 and 17, where there are 5 $300,000 college scholarships that will also be announced. You just have to be fully vaccinated by each drawing, and if you haven't signed up yet, don't worry. You may have missed today's drawing, but like I said, there are more. So if you enter now, you'll be registered for the future ones. The website is vaxmillionsgiveaway.com.
So there are entire television programs about people's sort of fantasies of what they would do with lottery money. Jamie, what would you do if you get that 617 call? Really, today or any of the other 4 weeks it's going to happen?
Yeah, you know, I dream about this every time there's a big Mega Millions or Powerball jackpot. And so I've been dreaming about this one, too, since they announced it was going to happen. Although I don't really mean to be a Debbie Downer here, but it isn't really $1 million because there's this thing called state and federal taxes. But whatever the final taxish maxes, you know, whatever the final number ends up being, it's still a struggle in my head between the sort of rational and the other part of me that's just screaming, buy a bunch of stuff. But if I were to listen to my rational side, I would be a classic millennial and try to pay down some debt. Of course, I'd love to put a chunk of change aside for my son to go to college. If there was some leftover after all that, I'd really like to help my family out with retirement. And I could also use a nice long vacation where they don't have internet. I'm guessing did the math here on all these things. I probably spent
where we can't reach you
dollar left. Yeah, exactly. But in all seriousness, lottery experts, Tiziana, say that the first thing you should do if you win is get yourself a lawyer and don't talk openly about winning, which I guess I've kind of blown here.
All right. Well, fair enough. And listeners, we want to know what you think you would do. 1-800-423-8255. Jamie, just quickly. Okay, we're not the first state to do this. A few months in now, how effective have these vaccine lotteries been elsewhere at getting people to sign up and get vaccinated?
Yeah, so here we go. That's the $1 million question, TC.
But
it really depends
on
who you ask. In some states, like in Ohio, where they've been doing this since May, there was an uptick but in vaccination rates, but then it really leveled off. In other states, Politico is reporting in North Carolina, they only had a 1% increase in vaccination rates. So it's kind of a mixed bag on whether it works. For me, I was going to get vaccinated anyway, and so with or without this lottery, it's just a nice little bonus and a chance for me to dream after a kind of tough year for everyone.
All right, Radio Boston's Jamie Bologna. Sweet dreams, Jamie. Thanks.
Thank you. You too. And if you never hear from me again, you'll know what happened.
We'll know what happened. That's right. Somewhere without internet. On the internet, Anna in Roslindale on Twitter says, I've already discussed this with my husband since I'm convinced I'm going to win. My winnings would go to the Boston Resiliency Fund with a little left over to support my takeout budget. And the Boston Struggler on Twitter says, put a down payment on a one bedroom and have enough left over for one lobster roll. That sounds pretty realistic. Okay, I want to bring in two more voices here. Michael Curry is president and CEO of the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers and a member of the NAACP's board of directors. And Evan Horowitz is the executive director of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University. Michael, welcome back.
Hey, glad to be here.
And Evan, good to have you again.
Oh, it's always great to be here, Tiziana. And hi, Michael. How are you doing?
Good to hear you, Evan.
All right, so are the two of you fantasizing about this at all, or are the pragmatic sides of you getting the better?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been fantasizing every time the lottery gets up pretty high. So, see, a Powerball. So this is in line with that. I'm always have anxiety that, like the Reader's Digest folks will show up at my house and I won't be there and I'll miss out on that too. So hopefully I'll see the call when it comes in.
And Evan, how about you? Is this, you're so pragmatic, Evan.
I know, but I never thought I was going to win the lottery. I don't win raffles. It's not, the universe is not organized in such a way to allow me to win. I can still fantasize about it, but I have no actual expectations.
All right. So, and I do want to clarify, Jamie's reminding me that you actually, if you get this call, and you know, somebody is going to, it's about a 1 in 400,000 chance with this drawing. If you are registered, you have to respond to the state within 24 hours or they will pick someone else. So we'll just add a little anxiety to the fantasy there. I do want to ask, Michael, we talked about this, right? When this announcement first came out, you and Dr. Ashish Jha were on the show. We talked about vaccine incentives. From your seat, does this feel like it has worked at all? How are you thinking about this program today?
Yeah, I mean, I would say probably the jury's not in yet. I think, you know, across the country, they've shown some appreciable impact of these lotteries that in other states, which is why Massachusetts did it. Credit to the governor and the secretary. They were looking at the data from other states where it did generate some movement. As I said before to you, Tiziana, I think the hard work is somewhere else. The hard work is getting into communities and getting the information out to people so that's not an incentive that is built out of their poverty or their desire to gain wealth, but is built out of their consciousness of how this is saving lives. That being said, if this draws people to it, I think it's a win. And we're seeing that some people are drawn to this lottery. I can tell you my family members have all signed up. And they took the vaccine. So that's a positive.
And Michael, just before I turn back to Evan, is it okay to kind of be excited about this and fantasizing about it if you're vaccinated and kind of wanting that phone call to come to you?
I think that's perfectly fine. We've had a tough year with a lot of stress. We've been dealing with our own lives, you know, the potential to lose our own lives or be hospitalized and loss of wealth and so many other things that we're dealing with in the last year and a half. It is good to feel good that somebody is going to win $1 million today and this week and in the next few weeks. Others will win and scholarships will be given out. I don't think there's any downside to that.
All right. So, Evan, let's just fantasize for people for a minute and say one of our listeners is a winner. And maybe they win the $1 million. Maybe they win the $300,000 scholarship for a young person, 17 or younger. What does the world say you're supposed to do and not do in those first few days?
So congratulations. The first thing you should do, as Jamie mentioned, pay your taxes. Set that money aside. Don't, because it's going to be a big bill. You're going to end up with a very big tax bill at the end of the year, $300,000, something on the order of $300,000. So set that aside. Get some counsel. But there is room with this amount of money to splurge a little. Like, that's okay. And so you should take advantage of that. The one thing you really want to avoid is creating a need to sustain spending. So that person who said, well, I'll put a down payment on a one-bedroom apartment. That sounds okay, except it's just the down payment. And you still have all these mortgage payments. You might have 30 years of mortgage payments. And you may not be able to afford those. You're not going to expect to win the lottery every 6 months or every year when your rent is due or your mortgage is due. So I think that's the one thing you really need to be thinking about or mindful about when you're fantasizing about spending your lottery money is, don't spend it in a place that's going to require you to keep spending additional money to pay for this new lifestyle over years and put yourself in an unaffordable situation.
One of the problems with things is,
If I can just add to that. So one of the things I'm doing next week is I'm hosting a whole bunch of people, mentees and my son's cousins online to teach them about home buying and how to build wealth, particularly as we talk about Black and Brown communities that were disparately impacted and lost wealth in this moment. So I think there's something to be said. If you get $1 million, even after taxes, how do you invest that in the long term? And I think Evan and I and the work that Evan does is always about building wealth. How do you reposition a family, a community, a people, a nation? And I think whenever you get the chance to get $1 million in your pocket, you got to be wise with it.
All right. So challenge accepted. Let's turn that to the listeners. How to be wise with this money if you win it. What builds your family? What builds yourself? What builds your community? How would you fantasize about using the money in that way? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You know, I am so not creative. My very first step would be I'd just pay off the mortgage, right? Just not have that hanging over my head anymore. But then it is an interesting thought, Evan and Michael. Let's say one could pay off the mortgage and do something else, or pay off kids' education, or pay off student loans. What are some ways to invest in other people that would be appropriate to a vaccine lottery and magical for our communities? I hadn't really thought about that. Evan?
Well, I mean, there are no shortage, right, of good ways to recommit to the community in which you find themselves. Some of them very local, food banks, for instance. You know, if you're thinking about the people who are still struggling, despite the fact the economy is turning around, but there are lots of people who are, you know, who barely made it through this last year and trying to put food on the table. You know, there's always this kind of very local option, feed people who need food. That's often the place I go to. Michael, I don't know where you think of as a kind of first option for investing in communities.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. We know there's food insecurity, there's housing insecurity. It could be rent relief. It could be giving people just money to pay their rent or keep up with their mortgage so they don't lose their homes. You know, I think of freedom schools during the civil rights movement, right? As those of us who are in the civil rights space are trying to get people in spaces to learn our history and understand how we got here in terms of all these disparities and inequities. So there's so many places that you can put money that will really lift up communities. And I hope whoever wins will consider putting some money in that place.
Evan, it's $6 million, right? Roughly the state is spending $6 million. And yes, you have pointed out the state will recoup some of that in taxes. But for argument's sake, what do we know about whether that is a good spend overall in this moment to get more vaccines in arms?
Well, you know, this is a pretty unusual circumstance that we all find ourselves. So there isn't a ton of good research about what's the kind of optimal way to spend money to put, you know, to get people to get vaccines. But we do know that really is the highest political problem, the greatest political problem right now. How do we get more people vaccinated? So I think it was worth trying some things. Now, don't get me wrong. I think there were ways to kind of improve the operations of this particular lottery. I mean, the problem you're trying to solve basically is, you know, when you're asking people to get a vaccine, you're asking them to take on some short-term inconveniences, some short-term costs for some really diffuse benefits. Like maybe you won't get sick. Maybe if you do get sick, it won't be quite as bad. But in the meantime, I have to go somewhere, I have to endure some pain. There are going to be some side effects. I may have trouble getting out of work. I may risk my job. Like there are all kinds of short-term inconveniences. And the idea behind the lottery is like, well, maybe if we give people a short-term incentive, that will offset the short-term inconvenience. But I think, you know, in terms of the kind of optimizing this, the best of the short-term incentives would be something you could really have right away, a gift, $50 gift certificate, you know, a bunch of donuts, actual lottery tickets. You don't have to wait for the lottery. You show up, they jab you, you get 10, you know, tickets to an existing lottery game. I mean, there were ways, I think, to do it a little more efficiently. But in terms of the big picture, trying everything you can to get more people vaccinated is the highest public policy priority right now.
So, Michael, Lundimax on Twitter says that, quote, it's a waste of taxpayer money. If people don't want to get the vaccine and get COVID, that's their problem. I got the vaccine at my first opportunity, end quote. Where is vaccine hesitancy mostly, in your experience with community health centers, coming from right now? And what is the right step to get people over that hump?
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost to the person who posted that on social media is that, you know, it's not just about our individual decisions. We are all interconnected. And as we're seeing play out, and I thought this was powerful this weekend, one of the doctors in a commentary said, we should be worried about people who don't take it because those are variants. And that it's going to take us longer to get through this pandemic if we still have these mutations of this disease. And we saw that again with the Spanish flu. It mutated. It killed more people. It lasted longer. So that's why it's not just about our own individual decisions. We have to crack the code on why some people won't take it. And there's a mix of reasons. Some people, it's political. It's connected to, as we see in southern states, it could be their political party or they're being conservative. It could be black and brown and immigrant communities with their history on their treatment within our healthcare system then and now, meaning historically and today, their lived experiences. And I just think it's very important for us to crack all those codes. Let's figure out why. Let's meet people where they're at. Let's keep coming to them and be repetitious about it. Here's why. Why don't you want to do it? Here's some information. What do you need? And I think we'll get there, but we have to inundate them with information and give them the assurances that they're looking for.
So I'm thinking about all that, and I'm thinking, you both know we were talking to Boston Mayor Kim Janey before the break, and she was talking about the Joy Initiative. Michael, I asked you a couple minutes ago, is it okay to dream about this? On Thursday, somebody's going to be $1 million richer. Well, it's going to happen today, but they're going to get announced on Thursday. Is there a way, Evan, to use that moment of joy to encourage joy and action in other people? I mean, it's a big deal for somebody this week.
It's a big deal, and I think that's part of the strategy of these vaccine lotteries. That is, there's a reason we're not just doing this once, we're doing it five times, and it's so that you can highlight some of the stories of the people who win. Maybe they had concerns about getting the vaccine, but they decided ultimately that it was worth it, and they'll be able to tell that story. And other people will see it and say, well, I'm not that different from this person. They won $1 million and they got vaccinated. It turned out all right for them. And so you can kind of build on this story. And I think kind of building on that joy and that commitment to kind of connecting with other people is part of why the lotteries were set up this way.
All right. That is Evan Horowitz, the executive director of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University, and Michael Curry, president and CEO of the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers, member of the NAACP's board of directors. Evan, Michael, thanks.
Thank you, Tiziana.
And you out there, I hope you're the one. I hope you get the phone call today. I hope you win. I hope you bring joy and prosperity to your community as a result. All right, that's our show for today. Thanks for listening. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Walter Withman, Amanda Beland, and Cynthia Betubiza. We had help from Ali Audette and Stephen Gelman. Marquise Neal is our technical director. Our executive producer is Satesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. I haven't won yet, but thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.